Under the U.S. Supreme Court hears arguments in a case that's significant to critics of the Environmental Protection Agency. It looks a bit like David and Goliath pitting a middle-class American couple against the EPA. But that couple, Michael and Chantel Sackett, is backed by a veritable who's who in American mining, oil, utilities, manufacturing, and real estate development, and by many groups opposed to government regulation. NPR's legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports.
On one side of the kaleidoscope, this is a case of bureaucratic power run amok. On the other side, it's a trumped-up case aimed at eviscerating the EPA's regulatory powers. The story begins in 2005 when Chantel and Mike Sackett bought two-thirds of an acre of land for $23,000, located about 500 feet from scenic Priest Lake. The Idaho Lake is a 19-mile stretch of clear water, fed by mountain streams and bordered by state and national parkland, with a shoreline dotted with houses, resorts, and marinas. The Sacketts, who own a small excavation company, broke ground on their planned three-bedroom house in 2007. 3 days after they began clearing the property and adding fill, the EPA acted on a complaint.
Three agents showed up and told the worker there to stop work, and that they wanted to see his permit for filling in wetlands.
Chantel Sackett says the couple had done its due diligence to get building permits, and since other houses are nearby, the couple had no idea they needed a permit from the EPA. That is about where any agreement on the facts in this case ends. The Sacketts contend their property is not wetlands, and thus that no permit is required under the Clean Water Act.
The EPA hasn't even come to the property and done tests to prove that it's not a wetlands. We have. We've had a hydrologist, a soil scientist, and a wetlands expert come, and they know it's not a wetlands. But it doesn't matter to the EPA. They just want to be able to say, nope, you can't do anything with it, and if you do, we're going to throw you in jail.
A coalition of environmental groups, after obtaining records under the Freedom of Information Act, has a different version of the facts. Here's Larry Levine of the Natural Resources Defense Council.
What they got back from their own expert was, yes, in fact, you have wetlands on your property. You have wetlands surrounding your property. And as an expert, I advise you to hold off on doing anything further until you get things settled with the government.
The Sacketts say that obtaining a permit would have cost them hundreds of thousands of dollars. But environmental lawyer Levine says there are several ways that individuals like the Sacketts, who have a small project, can easily and cheaply obtain a permit. 7 months after the EPA notified the Sacketts that they were illegally filling wetlands, the agency sent the couple something called an administrative compliance order. It ordered the couple to remove the fill and restore the wetlands, and it noted that failure to comply could result in fines levied by a federal court. 6 months later, the Sacketts filed suit to challenge the compliance order. Two federal courts threw the case out, saying that the order did not itself seek penalties and was not a final judgment against the couple. And that is the heart of this case. Every appeals court in the nation that has ruled on this issue has reached the same conclusion. They have all said that at this stage of a permit dispute, there is nothing to review since the government has not even sought enforcement of its order, much less proved a violation of the law in court, nor has any fine been imposed. Indeed, the government says it views a compliance order as a warning, noting that this one invited the Sacketts to come in to discuss the dispute and seek resolution.
This compliance order is not just a please don't fill in wetlands letter.
Damian Schiff of the Conservative Pacific Legal Foundation is representing the Sacketts for free.
It's much more than that. It is an order backed by the power of the federal government that says if you do not comply immediately with this, you will be on the hook for significant civil liability.
Schiff notes that the potential fines here could amount to as much as $37,000 a day.
When the government says you cannot build on your property, that's clearly an infringement of their property rights, of their liberties, and that requires that they have their day in court before the government can force them to do that.
The government agrees that citizens are entitled to a hearing. The question is when. And at this point, says the government, there's nothing to have a hearing about since no punitive action has been taken. Environmental groups fear that a Sackett win would allow major polluters to tie up the EPA in litigation, preventing meaningful enforcement of anti-pollution laws. And they point to similar regimes in other health and safety statutes. Congress, they argue, intended compliance orders and the threat of big fines to force violators to fix the problem. And they say that both the EPA and the courts have not treated small violators severely. That's no solace to Mike Sackett.
It makes you really question how the system works. You pay taxes to be punished by the same government that you're paying your taxes to. And when they punish people, and we're not the only ones, they do it without any accountability.
A decision in the case is expected later this year. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.
And you're listening to Weekend Edition from NPR News.
This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Alyssa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Benjamin Franklin once wrote, "Lost time is never found again." But while days and decades may slip away for good, sometimes the things we lose have a funny habit of finding their way back.
Take this example from the Orlando Sentinel. A 38-year-old switch technician at AT&T named Reed Banjanin was scuba diving last summer outside Orlando. He was combing the sandy bottom of a natural spring with a metal detector when he came across a gold class ring.
I was just amazed. I kept staring at it. I was like, this can't be real. I mean, it's in absolutely perfect condition.
The ring from Mississippi Women's College bore the date 1923 and an inscription, the name Louise Hurst.
After 20 years of diving, Banjanin said this is by far his best find, and he decided to try to find Ms. Hurst. So he set out to do some serious sleuthing. He hit the internet, he searched Louise Hurst, and he put the word out on Facebook.
Banjanin quickly learned that Ms. Hurst was born in 1903 in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, but it took months before he came across a marriage record and the clue he needed, her married name.
Louise Hurst had married Robert S. Ensminger 2 years after her college graduation. He learned that Louise Ensminger died in 1975. But Banjanin didn't let it go at that.
He tracked down another member of the Ensminger family in Oakton, Virginia, Louise's grandson, John.
The first call I got was, "Do you know anybody by the name of John Ensminger?" And sure enough, she is my grandmother.
So I called him and told him about it, and he was just astounded.
Well, it was pretty, I said, "What? You found what?"
And so it was a few days after that, I sent the ring to him, and he received it, I think, on Christmas Eve.
Yep. U.S. Postal special delivery.
Lost, but found again.
I think she knows that I found it.
Oh, yeah, she would just be laughing and rejoicing about the finding it again.
I'm just happy it's back in the hands of a relative, back where it belongs.
She'd have said, "This is a miracle."
That's John Ensminger and Reed Banjanin. Banjanin returned Ensminger's grandmother's class ring. They figure it was nearly 40 years since she had lost it in that natural spring outside Orlando. The Obama administration is imposing a 20-year moratorium on mining in and around the Grand Canyon. It says the ban on development will protect water supplies from potential contamination. The area is especially rich in uranium, and congressional Republicans say the move will hurt job creation and energy independence. From Flagstaff, KJZZ's Laurel Morales reports.
After years of debate and several short-term bans, today's announcement focused on the long-term. Interior Secretary Ken Salazar began by showing a short film about what he called the Southwest's priceless American landscape.
Spectacular as it is, Grand Canyon is more than rock and river. It's alive, with more than 2,000 species of plants and animals.
It just so happens that this treasure is surrounded by some of the richest uranium veins in the country. And when the price for uranium shot up a few years ago, mining companies staked thousands of claims on the land surrounding Grand Canyon National Park. Republican lawmakers have been pressuring the Obama administration to allow these claims to go forward. But today, Secretary Salazar said no.
It is the right thing to do by way of protecting the Grand Canyon, the Colorado River, and the millions of Americans who live and rely on the waters of that great basin.
Salazar pointed out that 7 southwestern states and millions of people depend on the Colorado River Basin. Much of the vegetable supply for the rest of the country comes from Southern California's Imperial Valley. The moratorium announced today will allow for further study of the aquifer. Scientists say they want to look into potential harm that can come from faults, fractures, and sinkholes around those abundant uranium veins. Minerals consultant Michael Berry says currently the U.S. has to import most of its uranium from Russia to fuel nuclear power plants. He insists the process of extracting these pipes of uranium is contained and clean.
It seems silly when the pipes on the northern Arizona Strip, they're probably some of the highest grade pipes in the country. There really isn't any evidence that shows that mining of the pipes with today's technology has any impact. So I think it's too bad. I think it's a missed opportunity for the country, to be honest.
For environmental groups, today's announcement is a big win in a very long fight. Roger Clark is Air and Energy Quality Director for the Grand Canyon Trust.
No matter what the uranium industry says, there's no guarantee that the Grand Canyon would be safe from contamination on the surface and down deep in the groundwater. We already have evidence of contamination from former mines.
One already operating mine a few miles outside the park is grandfathered in under this moratorium, as are many other existing claims. The ban affects new and future minerals exploration. Because of that, environmentalists are pushing for legislation that would strengthen and extend the moratorium indefinitely. For NPR News, I'm Laurel Morales in Flagstaff.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.